everyone. I'm Jacob Tender, and this is episode 15 of Variable Bitrate. This week, I'm joined by Sheridan Allen, the woman behind Punk Talks. You may have seen the Punk Talks logo on show flyers or mentioned by your favorite bands on stage, but you may not know everything that Sheridan actually does to help those in need. So let's find out more. Sheridan, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. What an intro. Thank you.
I like to give people the best. I like to bring people out and give them a little confidence booster. Sometimes people get nervous when they're doing a podcast.
Thank you. I'm definitely nervous. This is only my second podcast ever, so.
Who was your first?
It was with Amanda Starling of Angry Girl Radio. Everybody should listen to it. She's awesome. That was just like 2 weeks ago, I think, that came out.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Absolutely.
So what have you been up to lately? You were just telling me off the air that you got a new job. So tell me what your old job was and what you're doing now.
Well, I am a social worker, which if you're familiar with Punk Talks at all, or if you've ever met me at all, or even if you haven't met me, probably you know that I'm a social worker. I love what I do. I was working as an investigator for Child Protection Services, so reports of abuse or neglect come in, and I'm the social worker that goes and knocks on their door and talks to them about what's going on. And I just moved, I will be moving tomorrow to a specialty team working with adolescent victims of abuse and neglect. So adolescents in my community, I guess, ages, I think, 12 to 18 or 21, if they extend their commitment. And they have open cases with Child Protection Services, so I'll be doing some kind of longer-term case management. I'm super-duper excited.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm like the busiest I've ever been in my life right now because of my new job, but also I am in grad school full-time getting my master's of social work. It's something. I'm in 5 classes, which is as many as it sounds, especially when you work full-time too. And I'm just starting an internship with adolescent behavioral health, so I'll be doing like substance abuse treatment with teenagers in the community, and that's a lot of extra work too. So
wow, so where do you find the time?
I have no social life at all. So. But it's just a lot of not sleeping and a lot of using your planner.
Yeah, that's insane. I didn't know you were so involved. I mean, that's a lot going on. I've considered going back to school, but I have no idea how I'd fit in one class, let alone 5.
I'm in an online program, so I have a lot of flexibility, which is good. But it's when you have your bachelor's in social work, you can get your master's in a year. So I'm in my second semester, and I have one more, and then I will be done and ready to hit the ground running.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So working with social work, especially being the person that goes door to door, is that ever scary? Does that make you nervous?
I don't know if scary is the word that I would use. It does make me nervous a lot because I work with, people that abuse their children. A lot of people with substance abuse problems. There's a very big heroin issue in Northern Kentucky where I live. Really, I wouldn't say that I feel scared very often. I mostly, like, the one overwhelming emotion is frustration. I do work for a system. And working with people with substance abuse treatment or substance abuse issues can be really challenging because they're very stubborn. But really, I love my job. Like, I absolutely am crazy about it.
How did you get into that line of work?
That's a good question. It all comes full circle, really. I started school longer ago than I would like to admit, in 2009, and I went in as a music business major and was really interested in artist management and, like A&R stuff, which isn't really a thing now. But I was in like this tiny little Indiana community. I'm from Indiana. And there was just, it was a Christian school, so it was all very, Christian music-based, and it was just, not really my jam. But my first semester there, My parents were very, like, tough love method of money when I went to college, and they were like, you know, we're not going to bankroll you. So I got a job right away, and I applied at a thrift store that was funding a homeless shelter. And because of my schedule, they just put me over in the administration office of the homeless shelter. So I did community outreach, and it was basically anybody from our town that came in that was on government assistance and could prove it. They got like clothing vouchers and free furniture, and it was really cool. So I just absolutely loved doing that. And when I inevitably realized that music business is a pointless program, sorry to all my friends out there, I realized that I was like searching and searching for what I wanted my major to be. I think I was thinking PR for a while, and then like a light bulb flipped on in my head, and you know, I was like, oh my God, social work, hello. And I've been madly in love with it ever since.
That's awesome. That's really cool. That's an interesting path to go from when you're initially thinking about going into music industry professionally.
And yeah, you've made luckily it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of turned it around because you started your own little thing, and we'll get to that. But tell me more about school. What was it? What was your schooling career kind of like? You said you went to what school?
Well, this is another kind of interesting path. I have a really weird life. If any of my friends are listening, they're probably laughing because it's true. I have had a lot of experiences, I guess is the correct term. I grew up in a little teeny tiny farm town in northern Indiana that's like halfway between Chicago and Indianapolis. So if anybody's ever driven on like 65 north past the, you know, the windmill things, what are those called?
Turbines?
The turbines, yeah, the big turbine farm. That's where I'm from. Like, that is the area that I grew up in. So I went to a tiny school called Anderson University for the first 2.5 years of school, and it just ended up not working out. I did not fit in there, really. It was, I don't know, it just wasn't for me. I wanted a small school at first, and because I came from a small town, and then after a while I did not feel that way. So I took a semester off and I transferred to Northern Kentucky University, which is where I graduated from in 2015. And I added another major. So I have a bachelor's in social work and a bachelor's of science in sociology. And I took a year off to, I did a like a co-op kind of with my current job. So I work for the state. And they have like, it's kind of like the army for social workers. Like you sign a contract, they pay your tuition, and then you work for them for so long after you graduate. So I am, into the second half of my 2-year contract, and, you know, I took a year off to adjust to working full time and then kind of hopped right back in, and I'm at the University of Louisville getting my Master's of Science in Social Work. But if any Louisville fans are listening, I do not like your basketball team. I have to say it, like, go Cats, you know?
Sports.
Basketball is really the only thing that I like. I don't even really follow it anymore, but I used to. But everything else sucks. Yeah, it's terrible.
Well, cool. So you're working on your master's, and I think that's great.
Thank you.
I notice you're very well spoken, and I think that's great. A lot of people come on the show and they're very nervous, and that kind of, you know, impedes their ability to speak. But you sound like you're able to speak very well. And with Punk Talks, let's get into Punk Talks a little bit, because are you doing any speaking engagements with Punk Talks? Are you like going out and like talking places or going to shows?
Well, I really have only done a few kind of, I guess, speaking engagements with Punk Talks. I did a lecture through my alma mater, Northern Kentucky University, does a like community lecture series through the Baker Hunt Cultural Arts Center. So I gave a lecture on like Punk Talks and mental health within the music industry in December, I think. And I was invited to speak at a conference in Cincinnati, but ended up not being able to for some reason. Oh, sorry, my cat's being a heathen. And my next speaking engagements will be at Snowed In, which is in Cleveland, November 12th, right?
Yep.
So I'm still kind of in the works on what I'm going to be doing, but there will be a lot of education and discussion and talk about self-care and mental health, and it will be super fun.
That sounds fun. I'm stoked for Snowden. That's a great
Me
show every
too.
Year.
Yeah, I'm so,
I'll
excited.
I'll hopefully be there.
You definitely should be. I'll be there for sure.
Awesome. So tell me, give me the pitch on Punk Talks. How do you explain to people when they ask you, what is Punk Talks all about?
Oh my gosh. Punk Talks is super cool and awesome. Punk Talks is an organization that offers free professional therapy and mental health services to music industry workers, touring musicians, and pretty much anyone who feels that they cannot cope with the stressors of working in music or, mm-hmm. you know, their involvement in music. And I also, you know, in addition to serving that kind of specific population, I do a lot of education and awareness for, you know, showgoers, like people who participate in the scene, people that just, you know, like bands, sure. to teach them how, you know, they can practice self-care at home, how they can stop putting pressure on musicians to, like, create all the time and, like, mm-hmm. you know, stop giving musicians credit for saving your life, things like that. So basically I just get to go to see bands I love and talk at them about mental health for hours, and somehow people continue to let me do this. It's sick.
It's really cool. You're not being paid for this, right? This isn't like a paying gig. This is,
no.
this
I
is
wish.
Just something that you're doing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we get a lot of donations, so that's good. Toy Cars is a great band from New Jersey. They just recently announced that they're going to be donating some proceeds from their test presses that they have left over. They're going to be donating those to Punk Talks.
Cool.
I've worked with, you know, some other bands that have done things like that in the past, and I had a benefit show in March, this past March, and so a lot of donations came from that. But yeah, I mean, it's all donations based and self-funded, basically. We're like working on some grant writing right now, but
okay,
still super small scale.
Who do you have working with you?
Oh my gosh, I have the most amazing people working with me. Do you mean like bands or like my team?
Give me the team first. I'm more interested in that right now.
Ooh, the team is the dream team. Today is my social media coordinator, Alyssa McCarthy's 21st birthday, so happy birthday to her. Haley Lamb is my assistant. She does my volunteer coordination, so anybody that reaches out to me and says, I really want to help, I send them Haley's way, and she equips them. She is from Michigan, and she's amazing. My marketing director is Jeff Fidler. He just moved to Boston. He's originally from Connecticut though, and he is getting his master's in marketing right now, so he's like a genius. And my social media coordinators are under Jeff, and that's Alyssa and then Emily Balserac, who said that she'll give me $5 every time I pronounce her last name correctly, so this is the second time. I'm keeping track. Joel Funk of 36 Vultures is my artistic director. He does all of my graphics and everything for me. He's awesome.
He's great. Did he do your new website?
He did do Squarespace did my new website, but
right.
but he pointed me in the right direction. He did okay. the Tumblr when we still had it, but he does, like, except for the main logo, which was done by my friend Liz Schmidt and edited by my other friend Leah Kroger. Joel does all my other graphics, like all my, you know, like images on Facebook and Instagram and stuff like mm-hmm. that. He runs a website called 36 Vultures. It's like in the vein of, you know, Property of Zach kind of.
Right.
So everybody
Very
should
good
check
website.
That out too. Yeah, he's awesome.
Absolutely.
Let's see. I feel like that's my whole. Oh well, I have Ryan Kelly, my therapist, of course. He is an LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker. And they are, like, clinicians, so they're professional therapists. And he's based out of Chicago, so he, you know, he does all of the, like, free professional therapy stuff, and he works with people who ask us for help, and he guides us in all of our liability stuff, and he's the bomb.
Wow, that's a lot more involved than I thought. I honestly, it I thought just,
it just recently got to that point. Like for okay. a very long time, it was just me. I have a lot of other people that I have to shout out in this because they're so helpful. Abby Allman has been doing my grant writing for me. She's another social work student out of Detroit. And Andrew Bankovich is just like a Punk Talks fanboy, and he contributes like weekly and like takes flyers to every show and like has wow. worn he wears my shirts at all. He's awesome. He's like 19 from Michigan, and he just like really believes in what I'm doing. It's awesome. But I am very, very lucky and very it's wild that I think it's wild that there are so many people that are that believe in what I do and want to help.
How did Punk Talks come about? Where did you get the idea to get this thing going and like help people within the music industry specifically?
Well, I always say that Punk Talks was kind of born of a quarter life crisis. I was in my last semester of undergrad, and as I mentioned before, I've always wanted to work in the music industry, and I just never, I was not ever living in an area with a scene, that had a scene accessible to it. I grew up in a rural farm town. Then I lived in a, Christian indie college cove. Then in Cincinnati, there's like a crust punk scene, but there's not really like emo or anything. And, my music taste was kind of evolving as I was getting older, but I didn't really have any like friends that were interested in the same music that I was. And mm-hmm. I was just feeling very isolated and really alone in, wanting to do this. I did not know anyone, but I knew that it's all about who you know. And I was just like about to graduate, and I thought, I've always wanted to work in the music industry, and now what can I do? I'm going to be out of college, I'm going to be starting my career. What the heck can I even do? And I was I had recently been listening to a lot of Modern Baseball at the time, and I had been thinking, I had just learned, I guess, that they were students. Mm-hmm. And I was, it was like finals week or something of my first semester. And I was thinking, I am so stressed out right now. And college is all that I do. And so here's this band with this meteoric rise to fame. And they're all still in school. They must be so freaked out, all the time, And yeah. It just kind of dawned on me, wait a second. I can help them. Okay, I don't have any marketable skills in the music industry per se, but because I have one skill set, and it is helping people. So I was mm-hmm. Oh my God, all right, yeah, I can do this. And I remember running around to a bunch of, I am a member of Phi Sigma Sigma sorority, and I'm an alum, but I was running around and telling all my sorority sisters about it, who of course are not interested in punk music at all, And yeah. They're just yeah, Sheridan, sounds great. This is a cool idea. And I sent out some emails that were ignored and, really didn't know where to start. And finally, a photographer that just happened to follow me on Tumblr reblogged it, and a personal text post that I just mm-hmm. decided to write. And then the band Foxing saw it and they reblogged it, and so it kind of got some attention from there. And after that, I met someone in February that just really believed in what I was doing and really, really wanted to help me grow. So they have, really pushed to, they're a member of a band. I will respect their anonymity. But they, really kind of pushed that onto the people that they knew. And, eventually it reached Cam, and he thought it was a great idea. So he started, shouting from the rooftops. And
this is Cam from Sorority Noise.
Yeah, oh, great. Cam Boucher. Right. And here we are.
Here you are. And you're all over the place. I'm saying the Punk Talks thing everywhere now.
Oh, my gosh. If that's real, that's really great.
It's true. I mean, obviously we're sort of in the same geographical location. You're in Cincinnati, I'm in the Akron area, so we share a lot of friends, the Bravo host guys and all the dudes from that sort of scene. But, apart mm-hmm. from that, I'm seeing the Punk Talks logo on tour flyers and stuff like that, and it's cool to hear other people talking about it. And Obviously, you've done a lot of work with a lot of high-profile bands now, which is really, really cool. So what work are you, you know, when you say that you're working with these bands and that you're, you know, you're having conversations with them and like helping them out with all the pressures that they have, you know, obviously a lot of the bands in our racket are very young. They're usually our age or even in some cases younger.
Yeah, often younger.
And they're being, you know, they're being put up on these pedestals, literally.
Absolutely.
Like they're being put up on stages and idolized by, you know, teenagers or young adults, and that provides a heck of a lot of pressure, more than I think I could probably deal with.
Right, so absolutely.
When we're having conversations with these people, obviously keeping these names private, we don't want to disclose anything personal about anybody. Generally, what are the conversations that you're having with them? What are the issues that a lot of these artists are running into specifically, and like, and how are you able to help them with that?
Well, that's a really good question, actually, because a lot of people that I talk to are either, I'm either talking to them about, you know, like what's going on in their personal lives, like kind of presenting situations, or I'm talking with them about, kind of educating them about mental health treatment. Something that I'm really, really noticing a lot, and I was talking with Evan from Pine Grove about this recently, that I see a lot of like the stigma around mental health treatment and like seeking a therapist is, especially in our community, is really, it's all about like, well, other people have it worse. You know, like, I should stop whining, like, I can handle this. And something that's really important to me is that people understand that, like, you're right, there definitely are a lot of other people that have it worse, but, like, you're still experiencing things, you know, and, like, trauma is trauma, no matter, you know, the severity of, well, I mean, the severity of trauma really matters, but regardless, like, you should never feel guilty for wanting to become healthier.
Right.
And, you know, you should never, like, devalue your own experiences or your own emotions relating to that based on something that, you know, like, is on an entirely different level of what you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I follow.
And a lot of people are, I mean, a lot of people have trouble kind of, like, wrapping their head around the fact that people, like, really look up to them. And that people want to know about their personal lives, or how do I say this? I get like something that I'm really, really passionate about, especially with younger teenagers, and like I work with the band Sorority Noise tons and tons.
Yeah.
And so they have a very young fan base. And a lot of times I will catch like young teens saying something like, you know, or even not young teens, like I see people saying like, your band saved my life. And to somebody like Cam, like he's said before, like that's really meaningful to him because he, you know, had that same kind of experience with other bands. But to a lot of bands, like, or, you know, even maybe to other members of that same band, like that's so much like pressure to put on somebody,
right.
You know, like they're,
yeah,
that was not their intention. Yeah. And them kind of understanding, musicians understanding that, you know, like, or having to kind of change their mindset of like, I'm writing this music as a creative outlet for myself and my own emotions. And if people can relate to it, that's really, really awesome. But if they can't relate to it, I did not do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and like understanding that if somebody tells you that they like your other album better than this album, that doesn't mean that you have failed as a musician or a person.
Right.
You know?
I mean, they just connected with that one more.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's a very honest relation of human emotion, like the act of songwriting and the act of performing. And I think sometimes we as fans can take that for granted. But, you know, luckily, like in kind of moving into working in the music industry, I see a lot more like understanding that surrounds it, you know, from people that like maybe they didn't like an album, but they'll say, well, you know, I didn't like it as much as this album, but I can respect like the talent or something. And I think a lot of that just comes with like maturing and growing up. So
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, so much of enjoying music and enjoying songwriting is finding that pivotal album during a certain moment of your life.
Sorry, you know, my cat's being creepy.
Squirt
yes.
him.
Do you want to say that sentence again? I'm sorry. That
yeah,
was like
no,
deep.
No, there's just that idea that, like, you know, relating to songwriting and enjoying music is often correlated with what's going on in your own life. For example, you know, I don't think that I would have connected with Dig Up the Dead by Mansions quite as much if I hadn't found it at that certain time while I was in college, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I feel like those who really enjoy that, you know, a record like that or Cardinal by Pinegrove.
Ah, yes,
you know,
that's
pressure,
the one for me for sure.
Exactly. It hit me the same way. You know, there's a lot in that record that, like, gets you right in the feels.
Right, absolutely.
But that puts the pressure on for the next record. And I can understand from, like, an artistic point of view where you want to follow up with, you know, something that's just as impactful to the same people that enjoyed your last work and put you mm-hmm. in the position that you are now to, you know, reach more people and et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is those people might be in the same spot they were before, and you can't write the same record when you're not in the same place. And those
right.
people may have moved on. And if you're still in the same place and you write a new record, they're like, well, this is just the same old stuff. So I can understand that there has to be, like, an unfathomable amount of pressure for these artists to try to please everybody when you just can't.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, a lot of them, like, one of the reasons why I think people like Punk Talks and support Punk Talks is because, like, I am an approachable human, and I have a lot in common with the other people in this industry or in this community. And with, you know, with these musicians, like, they're not in the same place, of course, but they still, like, have the capacity to have those same emotions. You know what I mean? Like, they're
yeah.
still, and that kind of, like, sensitivity level, it doesn't necessarily go away. It's really difficult, I think, for a band to have to understand, you know, like, I kind of see in the same way that a lot of these bands that I work with are, you know, very selfless
mm-hmm.
in what they're doing, and they're trying, you know, they're trying to reach an audience, they're trying to convey a message, and they want to continue doing that. But it's real, you know, like, they want to help people, and it's really hard for helpers like me and, like, these other people have to do something in their own best interests mm-hmm. without considering the best interests of others. And that's something that kind of comes into play with songwriting, especially, like, doing a follow-up to a big hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have, like, they have to understand that you're doing this for you, and you're, you know, like, that pressure that they place on you, like, you gotta shake it off. It's gonna continue to exist, but that's part of the job. So, like, you wanted
right.
to do this, you're in it. So,
are.
Yeah, helping them sort through that has been difficult, and that's something that I struggle with in my own personal life too. Like, you know, with Cardinal, that was kind of an album for me that that really kind of right place, right time. I just got a Cardinal tattoo, like, not too long ago, actually.
Nice.
But, of course, you know, for me, the one killer song is the same killer song for everybody, and it's Aphasia.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that I've really been working on is learning to find validation in myself and, like, find, like, self-assurance and not need that kind of validation from other people. So their lyric about, you know, I'm not going to define myself by the person that I'm thinking of,
mm-hmm.
that really resonated very deeply for me. And having, you know, like, having kind of a musician echo back that same thing that I'm continuing to work on, it's just a reminder that, like, sometimes you got to do you. You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's
great to
know.
Be able to identify with artists like that, because, you know, they're
yeah.
they're feeling the same things you are because they're human. The only difference
right.
is that, you know, while you could write a song and they could write a song, they just have a really good way with words.
Oh, I know. God.
And sometimes they can sing it too. So, you know, kudos to Evan for all of that.
Yeah,
but,
those jerks.
What do you suggest to people that are dealing with these pressures? You know, whether it be the pressure to create something new or to live up to a certain standard, you know, that somebody has for them. What is your suggestion to them to sort of get past that and keep doing what it is that they love?
Well, Let's see. I don't really necessarily guide people that are in that position very often, because usually they're just like needing to vent about it. But my kind of go-to exercise for anybody that's feeling like uninspired or demotivated or like overwhelmed is really to focus on what you're grateful for, and, you know, really thinking about, you know, like, what are three good things that happened to me today? And, you know, kind of just focusing on each moment as it's happening and being fully present and being intentional about, you know, like, being in every moment and not drowning in, like, YouTube comments and, you know, not getting wrapped up in how many likes a post got on Instagram. There's a practice called mindfulness that's really popular right now. They have a really great, there's this app called Stop, Breathe, and Think. And it has like a list, mindfulness is all about like being fully present, and it's a lot about meditation and stuff like that. So I will really emphasize that, or, you know, suggest that to people that are feeling really anxious about, you know, the pressures that they're experiencing. So, you know, if it's, I will make a disclaimer to anybody listening that, like, I do kind of general, you know, like, let's talk it out, let's figure out what's going on. But as far as, like, the actual therapy goes, Ryan Kelly, he does all of that. Like, I'm not qualified to be a therapist yet. Like, I will be soon. But, you know, if somebody, if it's more than just, you know, acute stress or, like, a presenting problem that they just really need me to help them kind of navigate through, if it's like kind of an underlying, like, beyond my scope of practice, I'll send them Ryan's way and he'll help them, you know, actually get better.
And that's great. And access to these resources that you've made available to people, where can they find that?
Well, everything is on my social medias for sure. Punk Talks at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the whole jam. My email is punktalks@gmail.com. And, you know, like, my name is Sheridan Allen. Hit me up on any form of anything all the time. I'm always down to talk about Punk Talks and mental health and music, always.
Despite your incredibly busy schedule.
Yeah, I somehow find the time. I like, you know, those little triangle things that say, like, you're in school, pick two, like, social life, sleep enough, good grades. You know, I had to pick two, and I picked sleep and good grades. Sleep is not really working out. I have okay grades, but so I just am like in a sea of like studying and working all the time. But it's not, it's just a year, you know.
Yeah, you'll get through it.
I'll get through it. It'll be fine.
How are you raising awareness for Punk Talks right now? I know you're doing some shows with the Bravo guys. Which is cool.
I am doing some shows with the Bravo guys. I'm doing Snowed In, like I said. There's some stuff in the works. I kind of told everyone I was not going to be doing any touring from September to May because of school, but, you know, we'll see. I am sponsoring Constant Cocoon Booking is doing a festival called Whoopsie Fest in St. Louis. I'm going to be sponsoring that. So I'm not going to be there, but hopefully somebody from my team will be there. And if not, you know, there will be materials accessible to people all weekend about, you know, what we do and about mental health resources. Snowed In is going to be like an excellent time to come learn about mental health or to talk to me, because we have like our own kind of setup and, you know, we have our own little like area where I'll be doing some lecturing and stuff. So that's really where I'm going to be the most accessible. But everything else is kind of in the works for the, you know, in the future. But I really try to raise awareness by being as present at, you know, festivals, at, on, you know, good shows that are with bands that support Punk Talks. My last tour that I went on was, I guess, with Tiny Moving Parts, Prawn, and Free Throw, which was amazing and just as crazy as it sounds. It was, it was lit. For sure. I have been on tour with Sorority Noise for, you know, like, I've been touring with them for over a year now, so hopefully I will continue to tour with them in the future. They're my best buds. Let's see. I mean, you know, any shows that are in my, like, reasonably in my area, I'll try to be at, but it is
really... For example,
really...
we met in Columbus at a Say Anything show.
We did meet in Columbus at a Say Anything show. That was Modern Baseball was on the lineup, so that was why I was there. Those guys are bae. Yes, we met with my greatest enemy, Danny Samet. Hate him.
What a jerk.
He sucks, yeah. but yeah, I did not get to meet Max Bemis that night, but I really wish that I had. He is
Me
so dreamy.
Either.
Oh my gosh. I am like, I talked about this on the last podcast that I was on. I like am not ready for the level of like the degrees of separation between people like me and Max Bemis, or like, you know, like Sorority Noise went on tour with Motion City Soundtrack. Like,
right.
I titled both of my like my undergraduate thesis papers after Motion City Soundtrack songs. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Did you get to see him on this last run?
I saw them, the last time I saw them was at Wrecking Ball, which was, I mean, amazing, but very, I like haven't dealt with it yet, you know, I need to, I need to face that head on. I'm being a bad example for mental health care right now.
It's tough when your favorite bands go away.
Oh my gosh. I have been a fan of Motion City Soundtrack since the first time I saw them. I was 14 years old. My mom let me skip school and they were direct support for Fall Out Boy with, Boys Night Out and The Starting Line and this tiny little band that nobody had ever heard of called Panic at the Disco was the opener.
Yeah, that's a tour.
It was, oh my God, that still to this day is like my favorite lineup that I've ever seen. And when because I got to go out with Sorority Noise and Motion City for a few days when they did the Commit This to Memory tour.
Yeah.
And they played in the same venue that I saw them in for the first time like 10 years before that. It was really cute. It was very special. But I like that's something that I'm really working on is I am not chill around like these high profile bands, you know, like Sorority Noise. I just saw Sorority Noise at the Menzingers and Bayside. And like I am a huge fan of both of those bands. I have been a Bayside fan since I was 14. Like their acoustic album I used to listen to on my Walkman, like walking to high school in the morning. And I just like could not be cool around them. Like I was just like silent, like it was bad.
They're very approachable.
I know they are. And I know like if I'm going to be doing this, I should probably like I usually calm down after a little bit, but at first I'm always like, oh my gosh, you know.
They're very, very cool guys. I'm sure if you walked up to any of them, they'd be more than happy to have a little conversation with you about.
I'm sure they would.
Very, very cool. I see you're wearing a Menzingers t-shirt right now.
I am. Yes, I know I'm not being cool right now either, am I? I wore this to work today, and I work half days on Wednesdays, and I wore it to work and was like, you know, like hip, cool social worker. This is
That's
Franklin.
Pretty cool. Hi, Kitty.
He's being a hellion.
Well, let's talk about safety in the scene. This is something that has been coming up more and more frequently over the past few years, which is, you know, it's both kind of sad, but in a way it's also awesome because I, you know, there have been issues in the past couple of years, you know, regarding members of bands or members in the industry using their positions to, I want to say endanger those of the more youthful persuasion. And this is not something that's new. This is not something that's just been happening within the past couple of years, but it is something that's finally coming to light and being talked about more openly on social media and on blogs, people sharing their experiences on things. So you have a piece called Safety in the Scene that you wrote on Punk Talks, and I'm going to link that here. It's a very good piece. It was coming out around the same time. A lot of people were publishing articles kind of calling out Kevin Lyman, the guy who runs Warped Tour, about letting Jake McElfresh play at the Kentucky date and or Nashville, right?
Oh,
Nashville,
yeah. No, God, he did not come to my state. Whew.
Yeah. So that was a pretty big moment. This is one of the bigger moments in the past couple of years that people have been talking about, because obviously Jake McElfresh has been caught up in a whole bunch of controversy regarding, you know, inappropriate relations with minors. And that's not something that I want
in
the
scene. Sexual abuse is another term for that. So child sexual abuse. Yeah.
There you go. and this is a serious thing. Like, this is not okay, and it's not something that I want in the scene, and it's definitely not something that you want in the scene either. So let's touch on that for a little bit. It's not something that's really being talked about right now, because there isn't currently anybody who's under fire for this at the moment. Thank goodness. But I still think it's worth committing to tape. I think it's something good to talk about, and just to make more people aware in case they aren't. So what is, you know, in your experience, what have you been noticing in the past couple of years as it comes to reacting to situations like members of bands talking inappropriately to minors and soliciting them for, you know, nude photographs or engaging in actual sexual activity with these people? What have you been noticing that's different than maybe 5 years ago?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a difficult question for me to answer because, like I said, I really have kind of just gotten involved in the scene. Like the past 2 years have been when I've really been involved. But I mean, luckily, I personally have not seen that happen, because if I did, then I would become physically violent probably. But yeah, I mean, of course, I am vehemently opposed to child sexual abuse. Like I said, I work for Child Protection Services, so I frequently work with victims of child sexual abuse, and seeing it in the community that I look to, you know, for comfort and for acceptance is unacceptable.
Absolutely.
I mean, with the rise of social media has come the rise of the virtual witch hunt, I guess. And I'm hesitant to use that term because I know that it has a negative connotation in general, but people are really kind of opposed to that term. Another term has been call out culture. So I see a lot of victims specifically will kind of come forward and say, hey, I didn't want to do this, but this person did this thing to me. They're not good. Get them out of our scene. And then everyone else will say, hell yeah, get this person out of our scene. And I, you know, I understand. I have my own feelings about it. That's all that I'll say for right now, I guess. I'll let you kind of guide the conversation.
Well, it is tough. The witch hunt call out culture thing it's a difficult thing to talk about and to traverse, because on the one hand, we want people who are victims to come out and speak about these things, because, you know, other people can relate to that. They, you know, whether it be within this community or others, like, people go through that shit all the time. You know, people are abused, people are taken advantage of. And that's something that a lot of people will keep buried down, and they won't talk about it, when really it should come to light. And in a lot of cases, they should go to the authorities. So in the one case, you want to empower victims to come out and talk about those things. But on the other hand, there's also the validity of certain statements. There have been cases in the past several years, even with very high profile artists, wherein people will make false claims online to either, you know, solicit attention or to damage the image of an artist or somebody in a higher position. And you know, when you bring forth allegations like that, that sullies their image. I mean, there's no way around that. Like, it's people, whether or not they know it's true, if they only hear about it once and they're going to take it as fact, that is going to ruin the perception of that person forever. So I think there's trepidation that needs that needs to be something that's there before bringing those allegations forward. But, you know,
I think the only people that should be outing abusive humans should be victims when they are ready. And that's something that I have really seen, it's a difficult position for me to be in as, you know, a mental health organization that offers services in our community, because obviously a victim of sexual assault will be my number one concern. But I think we also don't think about, you know, like, I think we don't think about the other members of the band. Like, you know, if this person was sexually abusing women or children or what have you, it's very likely that their band members didn't know about it. You know, and that's that, like, imagine your best friend or your roommate or, you know, that you have known for years and traveled the country or the world with, and all of a sudden they turn out to be somebody that you never knew. Mm-hmm. And I think people can be really insensitive about that.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that our concern should always be the safety of every person. So I think that approaching perpetrators of sexual violence with violence is not, you know, like that's counterproductive. We're not accomplishing anything. So I think that, you know, with call out culture, I mean, you know, I'm never going to dictate how I think somebody should choose to approach their personal trauma. You know, like I am vocal about my experiences very often, and I think it can definitely be cathartic for people to talk about. But at the same time, I think that some friends of people, or like friends of friends of sexual assault, can sometimes re-victimize people. And, you know, I think that we just, I think I've outlined, it's a really complicated situation. I think I, you know, explained myself pretty clearly in my post about it. In that, you know, yeah, it's unacceptable, but I think that there are different ways that we can go about removing these people from our community besides threatening them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And what are those? What ideas do you have for that?
I think that, I mean, the number one thing that I will tell any victim of sexual assault all the time is tell someone as soon as you can. Tell somebody right away. There are so many women's crisis centers or sexual assault, like victims advocate centers in every place in every town. And those places exist to help you. Just 2 weeks ago, a friend of mine who... he's not in the music industry, but she was sexually assaulted. And, you know, I just kind of approached her and said, you know, let's talk about this. Let's figure it out. She didn't really know what her options were. So I just kind of referred her to some women's crisis centers in her agency. And she went and got a medical exam. They gave her some medication. They talked to her about her legal options. You know, like, those people are there to help you. And I think reporting it to the authorities is very, very important, especially, you know, so this, I think... if this person has a habit of, you know, if they're a sexual assailant, then the more that we report that, the more that authorities can start understanding that this person has a pattern of behavior. Mm. But also because, you know, the more sexual assault goes unreported, you know, what can we do about it? But there are a lot of factors that work against victims in reporting. And there have been instances where I've been sexually assaulted and have not reported it for one reason or another. Because sometimes, like, consent can be tricky. But, you know, I just do not be silent about it. That's all that I have to say. Whether you are calling them out or just talking to a friend, do not be silent, because you will drown in your own suffering. And, like, you are not ever, ever, ever alone in any of this, ever.
And that's why I love what you're doing. And I love what others like Autumn Leavis and other powerful vocal members of the community are doing to help people like this. You know, whether it's within our scene or there are issues with those who hop into our scene just to enjoy the music and to get a bit of escape. I think giving the people the options and the tools to pursue help and to get in contact with authorities the right way and, you know, give them every tool that they can have to, you know, navigate these difficult situations, I think that's great. So many times it'll come to light online and we'll talk about it, but we're forgetting about the victims in that moment. We're just becoming a part of that witch hunt you talked about, and we're trying to take down the person with online social justice, but there's not much that you can do with that. That's not going to put somebody who has a pattern behavior behind bars or, you know, under watch, so that it makes sure that they can't victimize anybody else. So I love what you're doing, and I love that others like you are actually helping these victims and helping people find a way to deal with the problems that they're having.
Thank you. I will plug some other really great organizations within our scene that deal specifically with sexual assault. Because, you know, sexual assault is under the umbrella of mental health, of course, but these are even more specialized. So Safer Scene is a really great one for people who experience sexual assault within the music industry. A Voice for the Innocent is another. It's a Cincinnati-based organization, actually. They were on Warped Tour all summer. And Punk Out is, like, I always say they're the gay version of Punk Talks, but they work specifically with LGBT issues, and, you know, of course, sexual assault can fall under that category as well. So I definitely encourage everybody to check those organizations out. They're awesome.
Those are all awesome, awesome, awesome organizations. Very good plugs. Well, cool. Well, thank you for coming on. I want to, before I let you go, because you're very busy, and I know you probably have studying and this new job and taking care of
Could
stuff
be.
With your old job to do. I want to talk about some recommendations. What have you been listening to lately? What have you been into?
Well, I have some friends that are working on some new things that everybody is going to love, but I can't say who or what, but that's what I can't stop listening to currently. But also Jank, okay. They're a Philadelphia-based band. They're going to be the opener on the Sorority Noise headliner with Rat Boys, two incredible bands, but I cannot stop listening to both of Jank's albums. It's just like fun pop that's very, very technically proficient. Also, the podcast Criminal. I'm not sure if I've made it clear that I'm a super big nerd for social work. So human behavior is very interesting, but that's a great, great episode. Also, Intervention, which goes along with other social work things, which is where they have interventions for people who are addicted to drugs. They just put Intervention Canada on Hulu, so that's what I've been watching. So
okay. In
case you were wondering if I have any other interests, the answer is no.
At least you're consistent.
All social work and music. That's it. Yeah, at least I'm consistent.
Well, cool. This week I've been listening to the new Group Love record a lot. It's really fun. I mentioned it last week with Nate that it came out, and it doesn't feel much like a fall record. It's definitely more of the summer vibe, but it came out at the end of the summer, so it doesn't matter to me. The other day I was just working on stuff and I put it on, and it's just upbeat. It's fun. I love it. Those guys are so great. They're like, I think Connor might have said it on Facebook, but they're like the last great pop band. I don't know if that's true, but they're up there for sure. They're really, really cool. And then I've been reading a book called Kiss Me Like a Stranger. It's a memoir biography by Gene Wilder, who recently passed away. And Gene Wilder was always one of my favorite actors. I've been going through his filmography lately. I've been watching a lot of the Richard Pryor and the Mel Brooks ones to start. I'm going to try to dig in a little deeper to the smaller cuts. But this book's really great. I'm learning a lot about him and just the kind of person that he was and the struggles that he went through life. So it's a really good book. I recommend it to anybody if you want to listen to it on Audible or get an ebook or find a copy on Amazon. It's a good book to read. So apart from that, thank you again for coming on, Sheridan. I think this has been great. I think this can benefit a lot of people. I'll have links to just about everything that you're about.
Thank you.
Punk
Franklin's
Talks
really excited too.
Yeah.
You can't tell. He's asleep. So.
He looks tired.
He is tired, but it's okay. His job is to play with me and be cute.
We should have more cats on the show. I think that's what the show needs.
Yeah. I think all other cats are dumb, but Franklin is great. He's named after Frankie Cosmos, actually. Franklin Cosmos is his full name.
Well, he's cute.
He is cute.
I want
he's
a cat
asleep,
really
though.
Badly, but I don't think my dog or my girlfriend would like that much.
Yeah. Well, my boyfriend did not want me to have a cat either, but here we are.
You get what you want.
Exactly. I don't need his advice. Anyways,
all right.
Thank you so much for having me. I had super duper fun. When should I expect this to be out?
This goes up on Monday. So every week
wow.
I put it up on Monday. As long as I can get it edited. I do have a bachelor party this weekend, so hopefully it won't be delayed. But if it is, that's why. I also suffered a slight concussion yesterday, so I'm kind of recovering from that.
Oh my God, did you go to the doctor?
No, I didn't.
Jacob, go to the doctor.
No,
are you? You're
I'm
talking
fine.
To me.
No, I'm good. It happened 2 days ago. Yesterday I woke up and I was a little loopy, a little foggy, but I'm good
your
now.
Mouth's...
I think
well,
I'm okay.
Well, if you're dead by the end of the week, we know why, because you suffered a traumatic head injury.
I've fallen asleep twice and woke up both times, so I think I'm all right. I looked online. WebMD told me just to rest, so I've been resting when I can. Today's my day off, so it's my recovery day, and I think I'm all right.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. Tell your girlfriend I said good luck with her new job.
I will. Thank you so much. So that's it for this episode of Variable Bitrate. I'd like to thank Sheridan again for joining me. You can find the show on Twitter as VBRFM. I'm Jacob Tender, and Sheridan can be found under Punk Talks just about everywhere. The show notes can be found at curbside.audio/VBR/15. or in any number of great podcast players out there. Feel free to suggest your favorite moments in iTunes reviews and recommend us in Overcast. Thank you as always for listening, and we'll catch you next time.